Welcome to Car Stuff, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm your host, Scott Benjamin.
I'm Ben Bolin.
And I am Kurt Guerin.
Well, it's all three of us again. Yeah. We're all here again. 100% attendance, that's always good, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess we could forge on with maybe two people, but better if we have all three.
Well, of the three of us, I am probably the sketchiest, and so there may be times when I dip away. But the three of us are here together doing sort of what people in broadcast or entertainment would call destination stuff, right? We're here at a specific time to do a specific thing, and for us, it's live, right? We can't pull this moment up again on YouTube or anything.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, for us. But maybe through the magic of editing, do you think we could fix a few things? Because you know, I have a foul mouth.
That's that's Kurt Guerin right there, folks.
No, I really don't. I'm just kidding, Ben. That's you that has a foul mouth.
Probably.
No, really. To be serious, though, we come in here and we've got. Sometimes we have a topic that we've, we've got facts and figures and stats nailed down for, and you know, it's very concrete. It's something we can go right to and say, you know, it's this event, it's happening on this day, and here's the history of it, and mm-hmm. you know, et cetera. Mm-hmm. This one's just a little bit more nebulous, I guess, in that we can kind of take this a few different ways if you'd like. And it's more of a question that I had about, I guess, in a way, the absence of something that I miss from the past. A little bit. And okay. I wonder if it's coming back or if it's still out there, but I'm just missing out. Maybe that's the other part of this whole thing, as Kurt has shown me a little bit over the last week, that I might be just missing out on a few things. But my question to you initially was about daredevils and stuntmen. And I know there's stunt women, too, but we're just going to say stuntmen. Stunt folk, I guess, for this. No, I'm not going to say stunt folk. How about that? But you get the idea, right?
Yeah.
You know, people that jump motorcycles, people that jump cars, people that perform incredible acts of physical daring. You know, they risk their lives in order to entertain us. And that was my question, is this still out there in the, I guess, with the intensity that there was at some point during, you know, the mid-1970s, 1980s, even the late 1960s, I guess. Think about I want to use the word flamboyant, but that's not right. I mean, the...
Death-defying?
Death-defying is one, sure. Outlandish is a good one. I mean, like...
obnoxious.
Larger than life.
Okay. Yeah. You guys are battering me. I can't think of my word now, but yes. You got all of those right and more. Kind of the pageantry, I guess, that was Evel Knievel. You know, think about him. Okay, he would come out of his trailer, you know, in front of the audience. He would emerge from his trailer with his cape on. He had his white leathers on that were red, white, and blue. He would be carrying his helmet under his arm. He had a cane in his hand, you know, with gold. He had a gold cane that had, it was black mostly, but had gold accents and diamonds on it. He was a showman, a true showman, and he would talk it up to the audience. I mean, he was as good as any professional wrestler these days, you know, in the ring when they do their speech ahead of time, you know, their story. He was just as good as any of those guys were about talking himself up, about promoting himself and you know, how dangerous this is going to be, you know, like, you might witness my grisly death this afternoon, but I want you to know this. I've come through with every promise that I've ever made for you people, and I do it for you. And I do it for me, you know, that kind of thing.
And if you are a member of the audience in the actual arena or what have you, and if you're watching live at home on television, right, which they did pretty often, then there's this moment in that speech where you think, I might be one of the last people to hear this guy talk.
Yeah,
Evel went down a lot.
Yeah.
Like, he crashed a lot. So there's always that, you know. That chance.
Oh, sure. And some people watch just for that, right? Like some people watch NASCAR for that, right? They want to see the crash. They want to see the big one, right? So there's that element. But I think that, like, the pageantry, the audacity of this character, you know, just like how he would come out and just right in your face tell you what he thought of you. He was kind of a straight shooter as well. Things weren't going right. He would let you know.
Mm-hmm.
And not just Evel Knievel. There were other people too that were like that in the past. There was a guy that went by the name of the Human Fly that we'll talk about in a little while. He was a little bit like that. He had some of the costume characteristics or traits down that, you know, were made him intriguing in some way.
Was he the guy who climbed?
No. This is a different guy.
Okay.
This is a stuntman, but yeah. Okay. Many people went by the name of the Human Fly. I'm thinking of one in particular. He's a Canadian stuntman.
Okay.
That we'll discuss.
I don't want to spoil it.
No, but I guess overall, I'm just thinking of like, where are the showmen of today? I mean, I know that I do know that there are stuntmen out there. I know that there are people performing, and women, stunt women, that are performing a lot of death-defying stunts, a lot of stunts that do require a great deal of skill, you know, a great deal of courage, of course. Mm-hmm. But where's the buildup, the excitement of all that along with it? You know, where is that gone? And we've got a few theories that we've kind of tentatively talked about in the hallway here at work. But I think today, if we could just kind of talk this through, maybe I'd feel a little bit better about it. Because as we said in an earlier episode, sometimes things happen that are monumental in our, I guess I'll call it our industry. You know, we like anything automotive, you know, motorcycle, whatever, trucks, trains, airplanes, all that stuff. We love all that stuff, boats. But sometimes there are things that happen, you know, that world records are broken, and we don't hear about them for a long time until a listener writes in and says, hey, did you happen to catch this? You can see it on YouTube now. It turns out it was on television, but it was on, like, you know, some late night Fox Sports News or something, or it was on
ESPN 27.
Yeah, something like that. There's a lot happening out there still, I know, but you have to really search for it. You have to find it.
Yeah, what happened to the days of nationally, or in some cases globally, televised things where there would be someone saying, you know, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, for one time and one time only, Kurt Darren Garin will, you know, perform the death-defying triple axis jump while sword fighting an alligator who's also on the motorcycle over school buses that are set on fire. And now a word from Garin. Right? Like, it was, what happened to that? That's exciting. And everybody listening, we're all kind of like, oh, there's a motorcycle. There's an alligator? What? Okay, I got,
I got
10 minutes. What's going on?
Well, that might be part of the problem, right? I mean, that might be some of it. You know, you can't wait for that type of stuff. But I feel like you're right, Ben, that there's not one place. This is one theory. And I know this is a little tough to grasp everything that I'm trying to get here. And I don't know if I'm really conveying it as concisely as I really want
to. I get it.
But doesn't it feel like there's not one place to go to see something like this happen? I mean, it was ABC Sports. They had the Wide World of Sports where Evel Knievel appeared, you know, what, like 17 times, I think, on that show. And some of his jumps and some of his specials that he had on that program are still like ranked number one in all-time viewership for that particular brand. So they were on air from like 1961 until I was like 1998 or something. It was like 37 years, 38 years. And some of his stunts are still like top five, you know, I shouldn't say still. At the end, they were, you know, like top five contenders for the most watched of all the programs that they did over that 37 years. So widely popular. And I know I keep saying Evel Knievel. There are many others that we can, you know, touch on today and discuss, because there are people doing some fascinating and really dangerous things and fun things to watch if you're there, if you're, you know, in the crowd. But it's kind of few and far between now. It seems like, you know, you have to go to the event to see it happen. You have to, or you have to catch it on YouTube a month later or a week later or whatever it is. You have to either, you know, catch wind of it early, maybe through a club or a group that says, hey, this jump is going to be happening at this race.
Right.
Come and check it out. You know, and there are 10,000 people in attendance or 20,000 or whatever, but if you're not among those people, you know, they're the ones who post it then, and everybody else sees it.
And sometimes it's like an exhibition or an opening act, you know, before a race.
Yes, yeah. And I think that maybe one of the ones that I can think of in recent past, there was before the 100th Indianapolis 500, they did a jump with an all-terrain truck. It was a four-wheel drive truck.
Uh-huh.
And it was made to look like a Hot Wheels ramp. It was a Hot Wheels anniversary jump for the 500, you know, before the race. And they had this, it was like a 10-story orange track set up. So it looked like a Hot Wheels truck on a Hot Wheels track. And this guy did this incredibly long jump. I have the information here somewhere. I think it was, I want to say Tanner Faust, but that might not be the right name. As we get to it, I'll tell you. Did some incredible long jump right in front of a live audience. That's a huge audience. That's hundreds of thousands of people, maybe half a million. Up to half a million for that race in particular. So that's a huge live event, and it was also televised, and a lot of people watched that. So there's a chance that a lot of people saw that one event. But, you know, who here knows in this room even that just a few months ago there was going to be the world record distance jump for a motorcycle?
I was not aware of this.
Yeah, it never happened.
Me either.
Didn't happen. The rider was injured the day that it was, or the day before, I think, that it was supposed to happen. He was in a practice jump, injured both of his ankles, and it never happened. But it was going to be a live event called Evil, I think it was Evil Live 2 or Live Evil 2. Evil spelled like Evel Knievel.
Knievel.
Yeah. And there was also a female rider that was going to do, and I think she did, ride through several burning walls. She's going to break a world record for how many she went through. And I believe she did, in fact, do that. But the long-distance jump never occurred, and it might happen this year. You never know if he recovers well enough. But the guy's name was Axel Hodges, I believe. But I never heard about the promotion, the lead-up to it. So if I did want to watch it, I would have had to have been going to very specific places to find that information or on Facebook, on the right Facebook pages to find that information.
So do you think it's an issue of the audience, the larger audience losing interest, or do you think it's an issue of the way that people find or transmit this information? Because this, when we talked about this, one of the things I started digging into was stuff like the X Games, and the X Games have tons of crazy stunt riders, you know, crazy.
Very talented.
Yeah, very precise, very talented. Bikers and people who are riding, who are doing, you know, not one trick ponies. They're doing multiple stunts, multiple
sure.
vehicles and stuff. And they're around and they are as accomplished technically as many of the greats of yesteryear. And it seems like they have a great crowd at the X Games. But again, to your point, it's not something you hear about on the radio. It's not something that you often, oddly enough, even if you go to a lot of car news sites, you don't really hear a lot about this mm-hmm. stuff. So I wonder what happened, you know?
Even when we were talking about the Thrust SSC back a few months ago, mm-hmm. and then Jessie Combs, I think was her name, and
yeah.
she was attempting the fastest land speed record for a woman. I mean, I did not hear anything about that.
Yeah, you didn't hear about anything until after the crash.
Right. You know, things like that that happen, you don't hear about it for whatever reason.
Do you think, okay, so you said all the reasons, you said that, you know, the audience is fragmented. That's one, right? You
sure.
have to be going to specific sites in order to be notified that anything is happening to begin with.
Yeah.
It's not like everybody's going to ABC now to watch the Wide World of Sports on, you know, whenever it was airing. I can't remember. I do remember watching it, but I don't remember what day it aired, or it was a Sunday, or it was a weekend, I think.
Sure.
But do you think that, okay, a lot of things have taken the place. So, like, there's pay-per-view events, which are popular, and a lot of people have used pay-per-view to see things like that. Like, I think that, God, I keep going back to Evel Knievel, but I think that his Snake River Canyon jump was a pay-per-view event. Pay-per-view goes back to the 1950s, believe it or not.
Oh.
I didn't know that until just today when I looked it
yeah.
up. I thought, pay-per-view? You know, there were like maybe 30,000 people that witnessed, you know, that canyon jump or that attempted canyon jump of his, and they all saw it live, but, you know, and they, of course, filmed it. But anybody else that wanted to see that, they would have to watch either a week later on, again, Wild World of Sports, where they rebroadcast that whole thing.
Right.
Or go to, you know, like, again, a pay-per-view situation where, you know, they're paying, you know, at the time, we're talking like maybe $2 to rent the pay-per-view or something. It's not like, you know, the fights now where it's, you know, $80, $100 to watch a fight.
Yeah.
But there's all of that. And then also, again, this kind of goes back again to the performers themselves, the people themselves. It's not that there's not interesting characters out there, because there are plenty of people, as Ben said, that are wildly talented.
Sure.
And they
yeah.
do a lot of things. You know, like there's somebody that could, you know, be equally talented in a rally car and a BMX bike. They do stunts on, you know, whatever. I mean, they're adrenaline junkies. They love this stuff, right?
Yeah.
How much of this comes back to there's not like those kind of standout, bigger-than-life characters like Evel Knievel was? I mean, he was, I mean, just an absolute showman. I mean, he made appearances on late night talk shows. He was kind of making the circuit, you know, promoting himself. He was going, he's seen in public doing a lot of things, you know, well, good and bad, right?
Yeah.
But he made a name for himself, and he's a big self-promoter. He was someone who, you know, was never shy about talking about himself, I'll put it that way.
Muhammad Ali style.
Yeah, yeah. Kurt and I had a funny conversation earlier. I'll say something in just a minute about that. But as someone said, you know, he wasn't one to, you know, come up with like poetry like Muhammad Ali would on the spot.
Sure.
He was really good at the PR game, right? Muhammad
right.
Ali was amazing.
Very much so.
And really talented, of course, as well. You know, he could back it up. Evil could back it up with what he would do, his stunts and everything. You know, he always delivered on what he promised, and he would say something that was meaningful and it had a lot of gravity, whatever he said to mm-hmm. it. And he would promise things to the fans for the near future, and he was always leading them to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And that was mm-hmm. part of his game, is that, you know, I've given this to you, and I told you I'd do this, and I did this. You know, he might have even known that his bike wasn't going to make the jump, but he'd do it.
So
and,
this, yeah.
Oh, one
yeah,
quick
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he would say, September, you're going to see something bigger than ever. I bought my own property on the Snake River. I own a piece of that canyon. They're not going to stop me.
So it's kind of about against the, instead of about against another boxer or driver, it's about against physics. It's about against nature.
Yeah. You know? And he always was playing, you know, he was big into saying what's the next thing. And that's the thing with these guys that do these stunts and women that do these stunts, is that it always, always has to be bigger, better, faster, longer, you know, all that.
Sure.
Otherwise, why am I watching?
I see what you're saying. Yeah, it has to have that exponential growth.
Yeah.
I would also, and this is a point that I'm not completely sure on, I would also say the nicknames were cooler. People still do have that showmanship, but there are people like Lawrence DeSmet, who was named Indian Larry.
Yeah.
Not in a racist way. It's because he was known for riding around on a chopped Indian motorcycle.
Oh, yeah. Indian Larry. I did watch some clips of Indian Larry. Yeah, mm-hmm. He was a bike builder, right?
Yeah. And he became known for his stunts, but it wasn't until later in his life. He actually passed away in a motorcycle crash during 2004.
Yeah, at a bike build-off.
Yeah.
He was just like, as far as I know, I mean, I think this is the story, if I'm not mistaken. Wasn't he kind of doing some impromptu stunts in the parking lot?
I believe so.
Yeah, and took a topple and ended up with a concussion that was turned fatal.
And or what about people like Doug Demokos, the Wheelie King? Did you ever hear this guy?
I don't know about that guy.
He was super famous in the 80s and 90s.
He went up Lombard Street in San Francisco.
I think you're right.
You know what?
I think that's him.
What was his name again?
The Wheelie King?
Okay.
Doug Demokos?
Was this on?
He set the record for the longest continuous wheelie, 145 miles. It's a very different stunt.
Was this on That's Incredible? A television show?
I'm sure he had to be on one at some point.
If that's the one, I remember watching that one on That's Incredible. I don't know the guy's name, but I remember a long, long time ago. It was one of my favorite shows. But yeah, there's a ton of people that do stuff like this, and
a few more names out though while we're gearing up for this next
thing. Sure. Yeah.
We don't have to talk about their history, but Fearless Frank, Hurricane Hutch, and then of course, evil son, Robbie Knievel.
He goes by Captain with a K.
Yeah.
Knievel. Yeah. He's out there doing it. I don't know if he's still jumping or not. I'm not sure. I saw an early clip, by the way, of, we're stuck on the Knievel family because I've got something more to say about this. I watched this is well worth your time. As you know, we've done a show on Evel Knievel only on Car Stuff. We did that a long time ago. And there was footage on this program that I had never seen before about Evel Knievel after we had dug into this for, you know, 2 weeks before. And I never saw any of these clips. If you want to look it up on YouTube, it's worth 42 minutes of your time to watch it. I guarantee you it. It's called Evel Knievel, Wide World of Sports Classic, and it's 42 minutes long. Again, footage that I've never seen. There's audio that I've never heard before. Some inside stories of people that were there that, you know, were right around him that, you know, I had never heard from before in the past. It was a really well done short documentary and eye opening footage. I mean, it really was really cool. Some different perspectives of the ramp, you know, from, you know, where he saw it from.
Sure.
Fantastic stuff. It was really, really cool. But there's some amazing stuntmen and stunt people out there right now, as Kurt pointed out. What was it, Robbie Madison? Is that right?
He
did that Las Vegas jump that probably not a lot of people have watched. It's got a lot of YouTube views, but I mean, in the bigger picture, not a lot of people have watched this really.
Mm-hmm.
So Robbie Madison did an incredible jump.
Yeah, he jumped up onto the Arc de Triomphe in Las Vegas, and then
a flat top building,
right,
essentially.
So it's very high. I don't know exactly how high it is.
Yeah.
And then
100 feet.
Also back down as well.
Okay, and he landed it?
He landed it. I mean, he barely hung on, but I mean.
It's, Ben, until you see it, you don't quite grasp what this guy did, really. I mean, he's jumping on top of a flat building that's 10 stories tall.
Yeah.
It's 100 feet up, 112 feet, I think.
Well, especially when they show the view after he lands. You know, they show him up there riding around a little bit. Because,
yeah,
of course, they have to, like, ride around, I'll which check. I could imagine would be even more scary.
Yeah. I'll check that out. I know he's Australian. I know that he's done, like, he's legit. His day job is as a stunt double. He was Daniel Craig's stunt double in some James Bond films.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he also won a gold medal in the X Game. He did 13 backflips. This guy's crazy on a bike. And he also recreated some famous stunts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he followed in Evel Knievel's steps. So they're out there.
Hang on a second. I got to stop. I'm laughing. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. I got to stop. It couldn't have been 13 backflips in a row, right? It's like falling from space.
Yeah, I think they do maybe three in a row.
Maybe
three, but not 13 in a row.
Maybe 13 total over the competition. But,
I my source doesn't say whether these were consecutive.
I guess
that's less impressive if you say over the span of your life you've done 13 backflips.
I guess so, but he's to be a stunt double in a James Bond film. I would say you have to have some pretty good chops, right?
Yeah.
Now I do know that I believe he's the current record holder. Now this is where it gets tough again. You don't go to one source like you used to. You don't go to the Guinness Book of World Records. So as far as I've got it figured right now, 378 feet 9 inches. By Robbie Madison is the longest ramp-to-ramp jump at this point. And I believe that was the record that Axel Hodges was trying to break. He was going for like 400 feet or something, or over 400 feet when he had his accident where he broke his or injured both of his ankles. And you can watch the video, the film of him injuring both of his ankles, which is it's not that hard to watch. I mean, it bends his foot in a bad way, I guess, when he lands. But it's an impressive jump, I'll tell you that. When Robbie Madison broke that record, that distance record of 378.9, back in 2011, again, this is a long time ago now, so 2011, there was another guy that did the jump simultaneously with him on a snowmobile. And the snowmobile went significantly farther than Robbie did on his bike, which I thought was really fascinating. The snowmobile, get this, is driven by a guy named Levi, and I hope I get his last name right. It's Laval or Lavalle. He jumped a snowmobile, a world record distance of 412 feet. So, you know, they're side by side. He continues to sail for an additional, 30 some odd feet farther than Robbie did. But they did it side by side at this event in San Diego, this Red Bull No Limits event that they have every year now, which is really a cool thing to watch. It's where they go for a lot of world records. But Red Bull is a primary sponsor of these world record attempts, and they've done things like, here's one that we can all maybe think of, a stunt person, not necessarily motorized, but you remember the guy that jumped from the stratosphere?
Yes.
Felix Baumgartner?
Cool. Yeah.
I watched that recently as well, and that was a Red Bull-sponsored thing.
You know, I think that's what we watched live. I remember watching that live at work.
Now, see, that is the type of promotion without he wasn't quite the showman, the character, as would be, you know, like, again, Evel Knievel or, you know, somebody like the human fly, maybe.
He wasn't on camera talking trash in front of it.
No, he wasn't.
In front of the event.
But it got the publicity that some of the jumps in the past had received. So that was one that was similar where, you know, that was what people were talking about in the news in the morning. You know, when you go heading into work, you hear that you know, this either happened or is going to happen. I don't remember. And people would, you know, check it out online. They go to redbull.com or wherever and check out that jump.
Well, yeah, the live stream of that there was a lot of build up and a lot of hype before and after that. Oh. And it was worthy.
I mean, yeah,
it was
like Red Bull's super
incredible.
Into it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They have the cave jumping, I guess it's called. You know, when people dress up like flying squirrels.
Yeah.
They glide.
Oh, the wingsuits.
Wingsuits, yeah.
Yes, I love
I tried for years to get our job to put it in the budget for me to get one, but it turns out they're a little bit expensive and accounting was not satisfied with my explanations.
Man, I would love to have heard those explanations. You know who another big one right now, and just a few more names
sure.
right there, because they're and I know we're going to be missing many that people are going to be upset we don't mention.
We should still talk about the human fly at some point.
Definitely. But Travis Pastrana. We got to talk about Travis Pastrana.
He's
this guy, he recreated. He didn't necessarily break any records that day, but he recreated three of Evel Knievel's most famous stunts all in one day. He did it all in 3 hours, which is really, really impressive.
Wow.
I mean, that's a physical feat that's really difficult.
You got to also wonder how much of a role technology plays in this. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean,
Evel Knievel had that Harley. It was basically a dirt racing bike, or like a dirt oval bike, I think. It wasn't a dirt bike.
His big thing was that it was factory, too, right?
Yeah.
That it wasn't customized.
Oh, yeah, it's a heavy, big bike. I don't know how many pounds. I mean, I know the one that, was it Robbie Madison? The one that he jumped in Vegas, I think they said that bike was like 550 pounds, so you know that Harley's going to weigh way more than that.
Mm-hmm,
you'd think
sure.
it would, anyway.
At least, and it's probably not distributed correctly, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You're right. It was just whatever he could buy from the factory, and then he had it tuned as he wanted, of course. There were several of those jumps that he made where you would see him switch bikes. He'd bring, you know, five or six bikes with different gearing to the track, and that way he would sometimes, you know, make those practice runs where he'd stop at the end of the ramp. Mm-hmm. Back it up, and he would switch bikes, and you know, is some of that show maybe? You know, like it could be. I don't know. I mean, that's part of this whole thing. Like it's.
Well, I'm sure equipment would break all the time on those practice jumps.
Yeah,
and frames would crack and
sort
of thing. So
yeah, absolutely.
You had to have the backups.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? I know we're running a little bit tight on time, and hopefully some people can, write in with some other suggestions. You know, or check out our Facebook or whatever, and say some memories of the past or. You know, present that are kind of equal to what we're talking about right now, or maybe some, voice some concerns or some gripes or whatever. I don't care. Anything. I'm just interested in stunt riders and stunt jumps and things like that right now. But last one I want to mention is Ken Block. I mean, I think everybody kind of watches for the new Ken Block Gymkhana video, or at least he did it early on. Now, I don't know what they're up to, 14, 15, it seems. But when Ken Block was doing his Gymkhana series, he wasn't necessarily breaking world records. If he was, I didn't know about it, but it was just fun to watch. It was a lot of stunts that were, some were death-defying, of course, the speeds he's traveling and the heights he's achieving and, what he's doing. But mostly it's just tire smoke and fun. That was what it was all about. And I think a lot of people, as far as stunt driving, they associate that with Ken Block at this point, I think.
Yeah.
And before we leave here, we definitely need to talk about the human fly.
What a weird thing, right?
Yes. Okay. Very weird.
All right. So long story short, the human fly was a phenomenon during the heyday of motorcycle stunts back in the 70s, right? Early 80s. So obviously Evel Knievel is the king of this stuff. But people who followed this kind of stuff also followed the story of someone named the human fly. The human fly was only ever seen in public in a rhine-studded red and silver masked jumpsuit. And he had a little cape sometimes.
Yeah.
And his real identity was a secret. And also the stories that he and his team told about what he did versus what he actually did seemed, let's say, embellished to accelerate attention and fame. Like there were claims that he had 60% of his skeleton replaced with steel.
wait, just 60%?
Just 60.
Why didn't he just go the full 100 at that point?
Because he only did it when he had the, I don't know.
Oh,
I think they just picked an interesting number.
With each accident, he would replace that bone with a better component.
Until one day he is more machine than man. Yeah. So a lot of his stunts involved him being on the outside of a jet plane, like strapped on the outside of this.
Okay. Hold on.
Yeah.
So this is the part where it gets really interesting to me. Now, there are a lot of human flies that we've probably heard of that scale buildings, things like
sure,
that, right?
The
suction cups, whatever.
Yeah.
They climb the Eiffel Tower. This is not the human fly we're talking about. We're talking about the guy that he would go on the outside of jets.
Yes.
Jet airplanes. Not biplanes at an air show. Jets.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he would he would get strapped to them. He had a ton of accidents, obviously. And he was always trying to beat Evel Knievel. You know what I mean?
Oh, he was also a jumper.
He also did some jumps. They wanted to try to beat his different records, like the 13 school buses.
Oh.
He originally wanted to try it with 36, but his team talked him down.
Okay, I know.
Because that's an impossible number.
Okay, I think I remember this now. While you were talking, I was frantically looking for my notes, and now I'm just going to have to wing it because I can't find them. But I think that he had a jet-powered motorcycle. Is that right?
Yes.
And that's why he decided to go for 36. Now, Knievel was having trouble with, 13, 14. You know, he was in that range, and he was the king of this, right? 13 or 14 was about maximum at that time. This guy's going for three times that amount.
Yeah, so he did it with the help of a guy named Kai the Rocket Man Michelson, who added two rockets to this Harley, and according to Michelson, it had over 6,000 horsepower when it was done.
Okay, wait a second.
See, wait. And so, the human fly, for the record, only said he was going to jump 27 buses.
Okay, so I'm sorry. I'm having a hard time containing myself over here because, okay, here's a guy with a 60% steel skeleton.
Yes.
On a 6,000 horsepower motorcycle trying to fly over 36 buses.
With a cape.
With a cape.
And a secret identity.
And a mask because you can't let anybody know who he is. Now, he's a Canadian stuntman, right? He did make appearances, I know, on talk shows, and he would appear. He had the Mexican wrestling masks.
Luchador.
On. Yeah, what's it called?
Luchador mask.
Exactly. He had one of those on. It was red that matched his outfit, I remember. It was like a onesie, I guess. I don't know what else you would call it, really. Yeah. Looks like a Halloween costume. But he was very serious about all this. I mean, he claimed that he was in an accident that had killed his wife and kid.
Yeah.
He survived.
Yeah.
And he used his incredible mental powers to bring himself back from, the brink of death and decided he was going to just live life on the edge. That was his story.
Do you want to know the real story?
Oh, do I?
Pull the curtain back just for a second?
Yeah.
Okay. So the real story is that the human fly as a character, as a concept, had been created and bankrolled by these two Canadian brothers who wanted to diversify from their family business, which was literally making sausage. They were called the Ramassieris. And turned out that there had always been more than one human fly. That's why there was a mask. There were different dudes doing these stunts.
Oh, no kidding.
But one of them was a guy named Rick Rojat, and he said, I'm not happy just being a part-time actor playing this dude. I want a little more recognition, right? So he told a reporter his real identity. And then that's why the fly had one famous last stunt, which is that rocket bike.
Mm-hmm.
And because the thrust was so much more powerful than something they encountered before, because the ramp wasn't set up right, the bike actually went way higher than it should have. And then it stalled when he let off the throttle. The rear end drops. The back is, it almost goes completely backwards. It hits the landing ramp and it crashes down on the fly. And then they say that now, they look back again behind the curtain and say, well, this accident is the perfect time for us to kill off this character.
Now, okay, he was made into a comic book character.
Yes, yeah.
It looks like him. It looks like him with the red outfit and everything. He's a Marvel comic book character of the day.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had a similar backstory to this guy. He was completely inspired by this guy, the superhero was. So it's a fascinating story. And I should say this, too. We said he was on top of jets. We're talking... like four-engine DC-8. He's on top of that, and he's flying through the desert at super low altitude. This is...
The pilot was pretty daredevil, too,
I would say. Extremely skilled.
Yeah, good call.
Extremely skilled, right? And the FAA didn't want him to do it, obviously. But there's a whole story around that as well. He flew in front of an audience to do this. 253 miles per hour is the speed that he was traveling when he was on top of that thing. They claim that he could go over 300, but they had some trouble at one point. I know that one thing that happened, of course, he's in full leather, to protect him from, whatever might hit him while he's up there, supposedly. But one time I think this was in Dallas. They did it two or three, I think it was three times. They did three flights with him on top there.
Mm-hmm.
And the third time they said they encountered a little bit of rain when they were landing. And the pilot, I've heard say that he, because there's interviews with this pilot you can watch. You can even watch film of them doing this flyby that looks like the plane is 10 feet off the ground. It's probably 20 feet, but it's that low. It's really low. So he goes by, and they're landing, rather, as they come, they're approaching. And the pilot said, you know, there's a little bit of rain, but it was like that kind of rain where they're really big drops. You know, just a few drops, but they're big drops. And he said they were smacking the windshield of the plane. And he said they were so loud, you know, it was just deafening inside the cockpit. And he realized at that moment, like, oh, no, he's out there. You know, he's in this. And he's getting hit with these things, these raindrops. And if you've ever been on a roller coaster in the rain, you know what that feels like. It's,
right.
It's unpleasant.
Right, right.
Very unpleasant. So this guy's going 253 miles an hour, potentially. You know, maybe a little less because they're landing. But he could barely walk when he got off the top of the plane. They had to help him off. And even with the leather protection and everything, he said it just bruised his whole body, really damaged him. It was bad news for him, mm-hmm. for the human fly.
Yeah.
But he encountered a lot of injuries like that, you know, some stuff that were just incidental to what he was doing, obviously. But now that I know that there were many human flies, maybe that's he had a little more, I guess, recovery time than I thought he did.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's a fascinating story, and what a crazy character to look at. And you know, to watch these interviews where he goes into it just, you know, really deadpan, really straight on, you know, I'm better than Evel Knievel. I can do this. I've got this. Watch what I can do. Canadians are, by the way, it's very national. He's very nationalistic about it. He's like,
yes.
He's like, I'm going to show the world that Canadians are the best. And you know, there's nothing wrong with this. He's just promoting, you know, his own nationality. But he's like, he's super into the idea that, you know, Montreal, people from Montreal specifically are the best Canadians. And
right.
I'm going to show you how tough we are.
Right, right,
it's
right.
A cool story.
For the Quebecois and the Yankee alike.
Yeah. Just, I wonder if there could be, if there could be a character like that today. I mean, is there anybody that could be like that? Like, I've heard, again, Evel Knievel, I've heard him described as like Elvis on a motorcycle doing stunts. He was like that type of character, that eccentric, you know, again, full showman. Is there anybody out there that's still quite to that level?
There could be. I think the idea of the secret identity stuff is pretty interesting. It'd be hard to pull off in the age of the internet, but it would be a lot of fun. Hey, maybe it'll be you. either you, Scott, you, Kurt, or you listening along with us today. What's your stunt?
You know, one thing, watching that documentary of Evel Knievel's jumps, you know, he comes up to Frank Gifford at one point and says, you know, I'm getting up there in age. I'm 34 years old. I don't know if I can do this much longer. It's really taking its toll on my body. And you're thinking, you're 34 years old? You know, it's hard to believe. It's already nearly time for him to retire because of the punishment that he's received, you know, over the decades that he's done it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
He had a little helper, too. You know, that cane that I was talking about?
Yeah.
Look into what he carried in that cane.
Is it a sword?
No.
Oh.
It's booze. Oh. Whiskey. He had, and he revealed it on I think the Carson show, the Johnny Carson show, and back in 1974, he made an appearance, and they were asking him about his cane, which he had with him. And he unscrewed the top, and he pulled out a glass vial that had a plastic top on it, and he handed it over to Ed McMahon because he knew Ed McMahon was a drinker. So he handed over the whiskey over to Ed McMahon, and he screwed the top back on, and that's how everybody knew what was in there.
Wow.
And there's space for three vials in that cane. There's a point where you can see where you can unscrew the top, and there's three vials. Look like test tubes almost that fit down into it.
Wow.
And so they said that you know, he would have to have that to kind of calm his nerves beforehand and to kind of dull some of the pain that knew he was going to endure.
That's insane.
Before each jump. So if you see him with that cane, you know what's in there.
That's
but, you know,
insane.
Partially, it was also, you know, partially because he needed it to walk a little bit, you know, at some point.
How would you pick, if you had the opportunity to realistically take a cane along with you, how would you pick whiskey over a sword when you're putting something in there? I have a cane sword. It's cool.
I would go with the Joker option, which has, you know, like the gas.
The poison gas.
Yeah, the poison gas. It's purple. It's always purple, right? So you can see it.
Oh, yeah. That's a little... you know.
Or was it the penguin?
Did I? The penguin had the umbrellas, not the cane.
Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking of. I'm terrible at this, but that was, I'm talking about the old Batman version. But
well, you're mainly, when it comes to comic books and superheroes, you're mainly a human fly kind of dude, right?
Of course. Yeah. Yeah, of course.
I don't know. Like, this is the other thing, too. You see, like we mentioned on YouTube, you can see so many people making these, accomplishing, I would say, successfully, these amazing death-defying feats. We had talked before off-air about some of the crazy stuff that you'll see guys getting into in the Middle East. You know, they're out in the middle of the desert, ghost riding the whip, or one guy like turns the car sideways such that it's just on two tires, and it looks like it's not really finding a lot of purchase on something. And then you see this dude pop out of the top of the car and like get on top of it and do some little, you know, steering with his foot.
Have you seen the ones where they get out and they remove one of the tires and then put another tire back? They'll take the tire off
that.
Of the vehicle that's
crazy.
In the air. It's unbelievable. And they're on a road, by the way, that's, you know, looks like it's 10 lanes wide. And there's no one on the road. It's amazing.
I think the point of it is that these things, these stunts are still happening. It's just like you said, Scott, oftentimes we're not seeing them live anymore. We're going to YouTube and it's like, look what this guy did in 2015. Here's the twist. He didn't die. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's after the fact. I want to know beforehand so I can watch this event happen live. I mean, that's some of the thrill, that's some of the excitement for me, is that I don't know what's going to happen here. And I know that it would be tragic if something goes terribly wrong, but that's part of the thrill for the audience, right? The live audience gets that. When you're watching it on YouTube, you already know what's going to happen. It's already there in the description
or
sometimes.
Or in the comments.
Or you've heard about it, and that's why you're watching anyway. You know, either they made it, fantastic, or they didn't make it, that's terrible, but check out this wreck, and they lived through it. Or they walked, you know, it's one of, it becomes a and they walked away moment.
Right.
Which, those are cool, too, but... Yeah, I just feel like, you know, there's just not that the buildup and that excitement and that pageantry and that showmanship and that those bigger than life characters. You know, like, where's the where are the modern day Evel Knievels? Where's the Pecos Bill of our time, right?
Yeah,
of right now, Pecos Bill. I don't know why I said that. That's an old reference from, you know, what is that? Tall Tales, right? That's Tall Tales. But someone who really backs it up, who really does what they say, and you know. I don't know. Just I'm just kind of missing some of that that excitement, that tension. That's where the adrenaline comes for the rest of us.
You know what? What other genre? This is unrelated to the stunts themselves, but there's another genre that had something like this, and that was illusionists or stage magicians. You know what I mean? People would tune in and they're like, David Copperfield is going to make this statue disappear. Everybody check it out.
Are you peeking in my notes? Because
no.
I scratched that out. That,
no, I'm not. No.
Yeah, I was thinking like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was too. There was some of that of that excitement around that. And there was the David Copperfield and who was the other one? There was another magician that was kind of in it at the same time.
Not David Blaine. That's
no,
a different guy.
David Blaine is a different guy, but there was another one.
Siegfried and Roy?
They were there too, but they were doing their own thing.
Okay.
They were with the Tigers, right?
Yeah.
Incredible in their own way. Who's the other one? There was another Doug Henning.
Oh wow,
Doug Henning. Now Doug Henning was another magician who they, you know, the joke is that David Copperfield made him disappear, but but he did like some Chrysler commercial. Yeah, thank you, Kurt. I appreciate that, Ben. He didn't laugh at all.
I'm a very unsupportive friend.
No, but he did. I think he ended up doing like some, you know, Chrysler minivan commercials, and that was about all you heard of him after that. You know, they were kind of in a back and forth primetime battle, and it was very, very showy. It was very, God, I keep coming to that back to that word, flamboyant. I'm looking for a different word, but I'll get it. There's a lot of pageantry to it, and they definitely had a great stage presence, and that's what made you watch them, right? I mean, it was something that was different, unique, and you know you're going to be in for something spectacular in the end. But anyways, I'd love to hear some listeners write in with, you know, their favorite stunt person of the day and, you know, what that feat might be.
Mm-hmm.
And some, you know, world records that they want to see broken soon or, you know, haven't seen broken in a long time or, you know, that someone should go after because it's been hanging out there for 10, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be interesting, too. So whatever you've got, we'd love to hear it.
Yeah, you can let us know on Facebook. You can let us know on Instagram. You can let us know on Twitter. You can also find every episode we've ever done, including our Evel Knievel piece, wherever you find your favorite podcast. Just search Car Stuff Evel Knievel. You'll run into not one, but several episodes. There are tons of other directions this can lead to, but I think one of the biggest takeaways for anybody who misses death-defying stunts is that you can see a ton of amazing things now, just maybe not live.
Yeah, and what's great about this, too, is that you can watch them over and over and over again and share them with your friends. I could send you an email right now, Ben, with a link to 30 of my favorite stunts. I'll do that.
Please
not,
do.
Not to fill up your inbox. Right? I'm going to send them one at a time.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's perfect.
You're welcome.
Thanks, man. Make sure I'll make sure that I'm on a motorcycle when I read them.
It sounds safe.
Car Stuff is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.